Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and I need to start by saying Happy Pride! It's Pride Month 2022, which is a great excuse to watch some queer cinema. Today on the show, filmmaker Evelyn Landau returns. I asked her to pick a film for Pride Month, and she chose an excellent one. The recent film, Everything Everywhere All at Once, starring Michelle Yeoh, Stephanie Hsu, Ke Huy Quan, and Jamie Lee Curtis. Evelyn and I are going to dig into the film with a particular focus on the film's queer themes. Stick around. Before we get into it, a quick plug for our Patreon. If you love the film discussions we have every week here at Art House Garage and you want even more, and you want to help support the show, Patreon is a great way to do that. Patreon supporters get some great bonuses, including ad-free podcast episodes, extended podcast episodes, bonus podcast episodes, and podcast videos. Choose your subscription level at either $3 or $6 a month, and your support would truly mean the world. Get all the details and sign up now at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. Time to talk about today's film. So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I'm doing a couple of episodes for Pride Month. I did the same thing last year, and it turned out great, so I'm continuing on. I'm inviting a guest onto the show to discuss any film of their choosing. Last year, I had Evelyn Landau on the show for the first time to discuss a documentary called Disclosure about trans representation. That conversation last year was incredible, and I knew I wanted Evelyn back on the show. She returned earlier this year to talk about The Matrix Resurrections, which was also a great discussion, and I'm so glad she's back again today. She also chose an incredible film to talk about today, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm guessing most listeners of this podcast are at least aware of this film, and many of you have probably seen it, some multiple times, like I have. It was kind of a surprising choice, and you'll hear me talk about why with Evelyn in a few minutes, but I was definitely expecting something older or more obscure or something. Anyway, very glad to talk about this one. It's an excellent choice, and there's no one I'd rather discuss it with than Evelyn. If you don't know anything about this film, it's a comedy drama about Michelle Yeoh's character, who is also named Evelyn. She runs a laundromat with her quirky husband, Waymond, played by Ke Huy Quan. Evelyn is very busy keeping the business running, trying to deal with being audited, and struggling to relate to her daughter Joy, played by Stephanie Hsu. One point of disconnect in the mother-daughter relationship is that Joy has a girlfriend named Becky, and Evelyn is clearly pretty uncomfortable with this aspect of her daughter's life. Things get really out of hand when they head to the IRS building to meet with their auditor, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, and suddenly, the multiverse opens. Evelyn's husband, Waymond, begins behaving like a completely different person and tells her he's from another universe and she has to learn to connect with her different identities in parallel universes in order to stop a villain named Jobu Tupaki from destroying everything. That's the setup for this movie. It's wildly creative, hilariously funny, and in the end, incredibly moving. I can't recommend it highly enough, and I encourage anyone who hasn't seen it to go check it out. It is still playing some theaters, and you can also now purchase it on demand. In this podcast discussion, we are going to talk spoilers. It's kind of unavoidable with this movie, so please watch the film before listening. I would, however, encourage you to listen just to the first few minutes of this discussion either way, because I start by asking Evelyn about her own film projects, and there's some exciting stuff coming from her in the coming months. I was thrilled to hear about what she's working on. Okay, that's enough from me. So here, first is the trailer for the film, followed by my discussion with Evelyn Landau about the film Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Mrs. Wang.
Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention.
Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going. It does not look good. What's happening?
Devlin, I'm not your husband. I'm another version of him from another universe. I'm here because we need your help.
Very busy today. No time to help you.
Across the multiverse, I've seen thousands of Evelyns. You can access all their memories, their emotions, even their skills. There's a great evil spreading throughout the many verses. And you may be your only chance of stopping it.
Don't make me fight you. I am really good.
I don't believe you.
Wow, that looks really good.
Time is waiting in the wings.
The universe.
He speaks of senseless things.
Is so much bigger than you realize.
Places I could be. I just wanted to share with you.
Remember our mission concerning the fate of every single world of our infinite multiverse.
There is no way I am the Evelyn you are looking for.
Every rejection, every disappointment has led you here to this moment. Distract you from it.
Welcome back to the podcast, Evelyn Landau. How are you today?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always love chatting with you. It's our third time on the podcast now. First, we talked about Disclosure last year, which was also Pride Month, and then The Matrix Resurrections, which, you know, I remember going into that, like, I don't really know what we're going to talk about, but we talked about a bunch of things, and it was so great. So I've always just, every time we chat, it's unexpectedly a delight. So thanks so much for coming back for this one, and I'm excited to talk about the film we're going to get into today. Before we do, let's talk about your film stuff. I texted you and asked you what you have coming up, and you told me a couple of things. So yeah, what's on the horizon for you?
Yeah, so there's a sequel to Fletcher and Cortland coming out. I don't know if the name is public yet, so I'm not going to say the name, but okay. It's a sequel to the short films that I did with Connor Allen Smith and mm-hmm. some other friends. And it's the first one that I directed. So the other ones I just edited. And this one I was able to direct. Emma Thatcher directed the first two, mm-hmm. Another filmmaking friend of ours. And yeah, it was a blast to make, and I'm really excited to put it together and share it with people. So
yeah, I'll quickly say those are two of my favorite short films from the last few years, is the kind of part one and two of this ongoing series, which is so cool. And yeah, so the first one, it almost like it reminds me of the Before trilogy, where it's like this kind of romantic relationship over time, but very different. It's like a hookup that has kind of progressed. So I'm really, really curious to see what happens after part two left us with you know, I'm curious, how did you come into the director's chair instead of Emma this time?
I was asked. I think Emma has her hands full doing another movie. She did a movie called Provo, and she's working on that right now. That's cool. And yeah, so I was just asked to do it and happy to step into that role. I'm glad that you've seen the other ones and that you liked them. The direction that this takes in this one surprised us, I think, on set on the day, because it's improvised. They're all improvised.
Yeah. Okay. So, I didn't know that. I wondered how that went. Yeah.
Yeah. So
very
this is
cool.
We're excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that the first at least the first one, I think the first two played Made in Arkansas and Filmland around here for Arkansas listeners. So I'm sure there will be some availability there. And I think at least the first one is streaming or is like on Vimeo or something to watch online.
Yes.
Now. So yes. I can dig up some links to put in the show notes so you can check those out, because highly recommend that Thanks. Series and very excited for the third one. And then you also have another documentary project going on.
Yes. So this documentary project is about, it's an autobiographical documentary that I made about a time in my life when I had a mental health crisis and I was also coming out to myself and to the world as trans. And it's told mostly from my parents' point of view. It was a very like tumultuous time in our lives. And the only way that I could think to figure out what really happened and how to cope with it and how to move on was to ask them. And so that was a big work that happened a couple years ago. We've been editing it, me and my friend Laura Nelson, who made Garden Doc together, which I think I may have plugged in here before. That was a mockumentary, but we made this one a very different tonal piece. But so we're going to be submitting that to festivals soon. And so that's the other piece of work that I have to mention.
Wow. I'm very excited to see that also. I've seen a handful. So having gone to the Queer Cinema Festival around here, which just happened a few weeks ago, Kaleidoscope it's called, over the years, I've seen a handful of things that are either short or feature length, like documentaries about trans people and kind of upbringing and that kind of thing. And it's always so fascinating. So I'm really excited to see your version of that, which maybe I don't want to pigeonhole it into that, but like to see just your story as told by you. That sounds fascinating and I can't wait to
Thank
see
you.
It.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to share it with everybody and with you as well. So someone who knows me a little bit through my love of movies. So it's fun to combine those things. And I think you're right. So often we hear trans people's stories from other people's point of view, that it's so refreshing to just hear it from someone who's close to them or themselves. So that's cool.
Oh, cool. Well, we'll stay tuned for that, and I'll post anything as the news is around coming out for that. But cool. Well, I'm so thankful to have you back. I reached out and said, hey, I'm doing a couple of things for Pride Month. Do you want to pick a movie? And you chose Everything Everywhere All at Once, which surprised me a little bit just because I'd seen it a couple of times and the queer themes of it kind of resonated. But I don't know. I expect some like historical queer film or something, but I love this choice because it's not one that I thought of, and it's one that I already seen a couple of times, so I didn't have to rewatch it, which is always nice homework wise. And also I just love this movie, and it's interesting too because I knew it was coming and I knew it was going to be big and wild and was excited to see this movie, and I also thought, even especially after seeing it, like how do I even begin to talk about this on the podcast? Like I'm not even going to like try to do it, but having this kind of in, like, let's look at the queer themes of it, having a sort of an angle like that, I think is going to be helpful. And, it's quite a film and we'll get into it. Before you saw this movie, how familiar were you with these directors, the Daniels? They call themselves Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert.
So I had seen Swiss Army Man in theaters, and was very surprised by the fact that a movie like that existed. I think the tone is so weird, and so many of the choices are so exuberant and full of life, and I thought that it was a great movie when I saw it. But when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is on a different level entirely. And I think that they think about that as well, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember them saying, like, this is the first one that they're really proud of in a different way. Yes, I was familiar with that movie, and then I hadn't seen, they've done some music videos and stuff that I hadn't seen going in.
Yeah, I want to talk about a couple of those music videos really quickly because, same. I actually saw Swiss Army Man just on streaming. I heard, it's that movie where Daniel Radcliffe plays a corpse. I'm like, that sounds fascinating. Let's check it out.
Yeah.
And it is, it's surprising, as weird as that is, it's surprisingly, humanistic and like, exuberant the way you said, and moving. And so just, such a strange tone. And I think preparing to watch this one, I was like, oh, I've heard they have done some music videos, shorts, whatever. I'm going to look it up and realize they have directed a couple of my favorite music videos ever that I had already seen and loved. I was like, oh, that's them. I didn't realize. One is called, it's Simple Song by The Shins. I really like that video. And then the one I really love is Houdini by Foster the People, which has some cool commentary about the music industry. Has that similar kind of zany style to it. And then after watching this movie, I went and watched some of their others. I didn't know they did the music video for Turn Down for What? that wild rap music. It's just such a... Have you seen the video for that?
I haven't. I know that one of the Daniels makes an appearance in it.
I think that's right. Yeah, it's basically the zaniness like just turned up to 11. It's really bizarre and wild and that's hilarious. Awesome. They've done a couple of others that I really like. But then they have some really funny short films too that are mostly just like taking a high concept and pushing it and being funny and similar oddball style, most of which you can watch on Vimeo. So I'll link to those. Like there's one called Dog Boarding where it's just a bunch of people skateboarding on dogs, like just jumping on their dog. And they like made it, it looks silly. And yeah, that sort of thing is the vibe. So, but there is sort of a, I don't know, especially with, well, like I love Houdini, the Houdini video that I mentioned, like there's a little bit more going on than just being crazy. And I think that that's with this film, you can see that same thread, like they're really pulling out, like, how can we use this tone that we've established and make something really special with it? So, yes. Well, let's get into it. Before we get into like the serious parts of it, this movie's just so funny. Is there like a joke or a moment that sticks out to you as like that pops in your head when you think about this movie?
Yeah, when I read that question, I thought, how am I going to pick? Hot dog fingers, obviously. Yeah. But a raccoon. I couldn't believe.
Same, yeah.
When they said the joke, I was like, well, that's a really weird niche joke. And then at the end of it, I was crying about a raccoon. I was like, how did this happen? How did they make this moment so resonant and like so... How did they give it so much catharsis and like...
Yeah.
Just fully play it out in a way that is so unexpected.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say the same exact thing. And that's just like when she first says that, it's like, oh, this is funny mistake. Like, you know, older generations don't always get titles right. Also, like English is their second language. It's just like this funny stumble up. And it's like, okay, whatever. That's a funny little joke. And then when you first see the raccoon doing that, I lost it. And then, yeah, it comes around to full circle as all those different threads do in that kind of final moment where they, which we'll talk about the philosophical side of that in a minute. But yeah, I love the raccoonie thing and just the word raccoonie just every time makes me laugh. Well, yes, you selected this film in conjunction with Pride Month. So let's talk about the queer themes of this film. It's revealed pretty early on that the daughter character Joy has a girlfriend and that there's some within the family, some discomfort around that. Do you feel that the film handles that story well?
Yeah, beyond handling it well, I found it very relatable. And I think that that's always a good sign.
Yeah.
When you have a queer storyline and then as a queer person, you're like, oh, well, that's how it is for me. Or I have felt these feelings, I've been in these situations. None of it felt like here's a normal movie with a queer story in it, you know. And I think that's one of the big dangers that you get when you try to portray something like that without some level of authenticity. So I thought that they did a really great job with that.
That's cool. Yeah, I agree for what it's worth. I didn't know that was part of it, but then it kind of, you know, you're almost like, okay, is that going to be the end of it after the first moment we hear it? Is that just going to be like a little mention? Okay, we did our representation, check the box. But it ends up being a big part of the story. And I thought it worked really well. Related to that, as we were kind of preparing and texting around this, you mentioned the idea of Jobu Tupaki was meaningful along those lines. And so I guess context for the film, if anyone hasn't seen it, which I think we're going to talk spoilers. So. Warning. We should probably say that. Spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it, very highly recommended by me, and please check it out. So Jobu Tupaki is the character of Joy. We find out the Alphaverse version of her has sort of taken on. Her brain broke basically, and she can now see everything everywhere all at once. And she, because of that, is sort of become a benevolent. Malevolent. My words mixed
right.
up. Force in the universe, and she has created this bagel and everything that is like this black hole, which I'm sure all sounds very bizarre if you haven't seen the film. But it is the idea is that she knows everything and this leads her down sort of a dark path and feeling like everything's meaningless. So how does that tie into the queer storyline for you?
Oh, good question. I think when you start digging into queerness, you start realizing that it's about understanding the different potentials the world has, other than the narratives that we've been given by our culture or by our parents. And so when you start to see the infinite different ways that life can go and all the different choices that you can make, it can be heartening and disheartening at the same time, because you can find people and experiences that you thought you would never have, given the constraints of heteronormativity or cis heteronormativity. But then you can also start to find the ways in which so many of those choices and pathways are undervalued or looked down upon. And you can start to feel this sense of superiority. You can start to feel the sense of, like, I'm a person who can see the way things really are, or the way that all things could be. And you kind of, at least I kind of have the sense of, like, I know I'm not, that doesn't make me special or like a god, but it makes you sort of feel badly about other people who can't see those things. Like, you actually couldn't imagine those different manifestations of love or different manifestations of self-identity. So I don't know. I really related to that part of it, like the queer aspect of Jobu Tupaki. I also related to the ways that, you know, the origin story of Jobu Tupaki is that Evelyn pushed her too far to be the best at verse jumping, which is just, I guess, code switching or unlocking your full potential as a person or as a young person. And I related to that kind of thinking about, you know, being a former gifted student, you know, someone who was identified as someone who could really excel in school, and being pushed really far in that direction, and then eventually getting to a place where I couldn't do it anymore, and kind of taking on some darkness around that. And so that was another angle about Jobu Tupaki that I really related to, all tied in to the same character, all feeling like it's organically within that person's experience, but kind of different angles within that.
Yeah, I really like that. And I didn't make that connection, but it's resonating as you're saying it. And, and, you know, I think too, like, this film is good for Asian representation. And I think that's one of the things, and one of the directors is Asian. And that's one of those kind of stereotypical, like, Asian parents are going to be hard on us to get good grades kind of thing. Right. And I think that fits in really nicely with it. And another film that kind of deals with that too this year, Turning Red, the Pixar film, I think is another kind of answer to that, where we have kind of generational divide specifically in, like, an Asian community. But yeah, that's really interesting. But yeah, I like what you're saying about, because there is, like, you and I have talked about, like, unlearning things, and, like, in my life, it's been, you know, with fundamentalist religion and different things, like, unlearning things, which is such a hard journey. But yeah, then getting to a place, like you're saying, like, okay, now I know everything, you know, which, first of all, I don't. And second of all, like, there's that sense of superiority that can come along with it. And so I think that's the battle of to say, or it can push, like with the character in the film, can push you to be like, okay, I guess it can push you to a dark place, like letting go of things that you had, and like, okay, so if there is infinite possibility, yeah, then there's no meaning, which maybe kind of gets into the next question I was going to ask. It was just kind of about the philosophical side of this film, which, yeah, so the everything bagel was kind of like the symbol of that. So she has created this, which is also such a funny, creative way that you instantly connect with, like, understanding, she put everything on a bagel, and it's like this black hole that it's threatening to destroy the universe. But and in response to that, she says everything is meaningless. And so then she eventually, her mother kind of drags her mother into that as well. And she feels that way. And we have that sequence where Michelle Yeoh's character is signing the divorce papers and, like, just saying screw it all and like everything's meaningless, but then coming around to something else. So I guess before we get into all of that, but like, how do you feel about that stuff? And I guess the philosophical side of it, and do you feel like the film handles that well and draws good conclusions out of it?
I loved it. And it made sense immediately because it's such a basic concept. An everything bagel that's sucking everything into it and the universe. So I was like, yep, got it, bagel, understood. But something that I saw recently on TikTok about this movie, because I'm on Everything Everywhere All at Once TikTok. They're giving me those things because they know I love the movie.
I'm not. But, I got to get on there.
is that the googly eyes are the opposite of the everything bagel.
I saw this. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And that there's sort of a balance inverse between the googly eyes. Yes. That could represent maybe a yin yang or something like that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really beautiful. And that made it work even better for me as a theme. Something that we get to, yes, nothing means anything, but that means actually that we're free to do anything, and that what we always want to do is create balance with each other and find love and share life with each other. And I also thought that was a good tie-in for Wayman's character, the dad, because in that struggle between the mom and the daughter, I think that I kind of felt, okay, the dad kind of takes a backseat to that. Of like they have reconciling to do, where the dad kind of is his own person or isn't in that struggle as deeply. But with the googly eyes being the opposite of the bagel, I felt like that triangulation of forces of outlooks on life really create that really nice harmony of like everyone in that story has the perspective that is needed for the others in order to achieve a better understanding of the world or a better happiness in their life. Like they can't see the full picture without each other, even though, yeah, actually that's what I'm trying to say. They can't see the full picture without each other. And so that enticingness of that Jobu Tupaki character for me is balanced by the wisdom of my parents and the joyousness of other ways of looking at the world. Yeah. So anyways, yes, I thought it was great. I thought that worked really well.
I love that. I think that's great. And yeah, I love the googly eye as the sort of the symbol of that. So actually I ordered something from the A24 shop. I can't remember what, a few months ago, and they send little postcard like screen grabs from upcoming movies. And I got the one from this, and it's Michelle Yeoh's face towards the end. I think it's when she first puts the googly eye on, and it's like she's looking straight at the camera. She has a little bit of a smile on, but she's like bloody and she's been fighting. And I think it's such a perfect, like that frame, I should put a frame around it and hang it on the wall, because it captures the feeling of the movie so much with like sort of the absurdism. Like, it's like, if nothing means anything, then we can do whatever we want, right? And choose kindness. And so like the googly eye is the perfect like representation of, even though I've been beaten up, like I'm bloody and like this life is hard, I can have a sort of a curiosity and a whimsy or something like a kindness as an outlook. And I just thought that was such a perfect representation of, and the third eye, like I the idea of like seeing, being all seeing, or like seeing what's not there kind of thing. I thought, just such a perfect way to pull it in. And yeah, I didn't even realize until a few weeks ago, like the colors inverse of the bagel thing. It's a perfect coming together there in that final scene. And I love the scene where she's like going up the stairs and fighting everyone with kindness and
I love that. And not only could the raccoon control the guy and the guy control the raccoon, the guy could also be the raccoon. Like, it was like it just tied it all up so well. It's amazing.
I love Wayman's character too, and like so like the whole sequence where she's like a movie star and they're in the theater, and it's like the Wong Kar-wai thing. I just did a series on Wong Kar-wai, the Criterion set, watching through on the podcast last year, and so I'm ready for this all these references now. But it has like the motion blur that he's known for, and like all the colors and like the stylish suits, of course. So I just love that aspect of it. But yeah, then Wayman has that big moment where he's, you know, and I like too that it ties together with she has found out that she is living her worst self. Like, she is the worst version of
Wow.
ever. I yeah Evelyn, I'm just realizing, same name as you. She's living her worst self, and like that means she has this untapped potential in a way. But you know, she's down on herself, and she's like, "Why did I choose this?" And I love that we see like the little snippets of leaving China with him or not, and like her parents' disappointment and all of that. I thought that was really powerful. And then, you know, he gets to this moment where like he's like, "I would have loved to just own a laundromat and do taxes with you in another life." Yeah, you think I'm weak for this kindness that I have, but actually that's how I fight. That's how I survive in this world, is with the kindness. And like, oh, it's so good. Yeah.
It's so
really,
good.
Really well written. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that part, the way that it kind of gives him some dignity in a way that his zaniness kind of over that's the tone that you most see him in, is like silly or incredible in his Alphaverse version.
Yeah, yeah.
But to give him this other sort of reserved, like, no, I'm also this like highest self. Like I'm also have the, it's something that I don't think you see in a lot of Asian representation in media. And specifically in a blockbuster like this. So yeah, that's really cool.
And now it's A24's highest grossing movie ever. I saw
recently. I was going to bring that up.
That's really cool. Yeah.
It makes me so happy.
Love that it's resonating. I think it has the, it's big in a way. If I have anything negative at all to say about this movie, which isn't really even a negative, it's just that it's kind of exhausting to watch. It's so like a maximalist that after I watch it,
yes,
I've seen it twice, I'm just like, whew, I need to take a break. But it's so, so good.
One thing that was unexpected for me in this movie is that I cried. I don't usually cry at movies, like at all. I don't remember the last time I cried in a movie. And I cried laughing at the fight scenes with the the fight scenes.
The trophies.
And yes, with the trophies, thank you. And then I cried at the mom and daughter reconciliation at the end. I was like so taken by that. And then I wanted to call my mom at the end of the movie. And that's another thing that, you know, I don't really feel sentimental a lot of the time, and I don't really feel like a movie makes me understand my own life better than I did. And I feel like I wasn't the only one in that theater that had that same reaction. And I know that many people, you know, across the world will see this with their parents. And I saw it on the second time I saw it with my parents. I wanted to make sure that they saw it. So I thought that that was a really wonderful thing for a movie to do. And also a very difficult thing for a movie to pull off is to hit that right note of like, maybe if we see this, we'll all understand each other a little bit better and have a little bit more empathy for each other's experiences as a family going through basically survival in America, which is not another thing that is not really attached or attacked very directly by a lot of movies, like what it's like to either have to assimilate or face repercussions from, you know, the tax person, the tax, you know, entity. So I thought that was a really beautiful facet of the movie for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Like the fact that it's set at the IRS building for most of the film is so creative and interesting. And yeah, it's like the most mundane thing you could think of, but it's even aside from the multiverse stuff, like that's a life altering place for people with a small business, like you're saying. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah. I think, the familial stuff, it definitely resonated with me. Like I've talked to you specifically about like, the faith stuff. And it resonated on that level, and I haven't quite worked it out altogether, but yeah, I think part of it is just like what you were talking about earlier, like seeing, there's other ways that life can be, and it kind of gives a really literal representation of that. Like, first opening your eyes to the multiverse or whatever, like seeing, okay, the narratives I've been handed, there might be more that it's possible. So I like that it comes to that, but then it still has this reconciliation at the end.
That doesn't really undermine any of the characters' journeys. It doesn't say like, okay, you had this, you know, wild daughter, but now you're going to come back and be normal. It's like, no, the daughter still gets to be gay and rebellious and her own person. And the mom gets to be flawed and passionate about her family. And the dad gets to be silly and zany and also passionate about the people that he cares about. I mean, you just, you get a, you feel the resolution doesn't undercut anybody, you know, like, I think that's a really important part of it.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Cause I think about, there's certain movies that I think about that have sort of this, like, it's a child seeing their parents in a new light kind of thing. Like the movie Shoplifters, I'm a really big fan of. And it has a moment like that near the end where it feels like this child sees his father, or like, you know, surrogate father in this film, like finally sees him for who he really is and loves him for that. But then also there's like a distance that can be there. But in that movie, you don't really, I need to watch it again and think about that. But I think at least not as clearly, like you're saying, all sides are honored in a way. And I don't think that movie is like anti any of the characters, but with this one, yeah, each character's perspective is given like an equal footing. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And I saw a tweet recently too, that was, it was a kind of a, like with Turning Red, and there was a handful of other movies that were like, like millennial filmmakers are going out and like making movies where parents apologize, which that's an oversimplification, but it's like, it is like this generational divide. How do we get over it? It's Turning Red. It was Encanto, the Disney movie from recently. And there's one other that I was like, exactly fits in with that same kind of theme. But yeah, that is some, seemed to be a little bit of a trend, which is interesting. But
yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said about that generational divide, and the thing that happens through every generation, where we realize that we have all adapted to an unkind world in our own ways, and then have tried to communicate how to do that to the next generation, and the next generation actually is living in a completely different world, so they're not going to be able to do the same thing again. Whether it's a religious thing or something about your sexuality or gender identity or, you know, whatever. It's all just ways of being that are not going to be perfect through multiple generations. Like the next iteration has to be different in order for that to work for them.
That's beautiful. And I think that's a, you know, perfect theme to fit in with Pride Month is the generational divide, because that's such a part of the ongoing struggles around that sort of thing. And so I think that's another good reason that this movie really ties in with everything.
Everywhere, all at once.
there you go. Well, that is Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that is, I think it's coming to home video very soon. So actually, you know, we're
it's
late
out
for
now,
the theatrical release.
Now.
Just came out recently, so perfect. I think that is a recent thing, and you can watch it at home. And I will link to VOD links and all of that. Highly recommend it again if you haven't seen it. And now that we've spoiled everything for you, but I think even if you did somehow listen all through this, there's still so much to gain from it. And it's such an experience of a movie. So thank you so much, Evelyn, for joining. Always a pleasure. And we'll have to do this again soon.
Thank you. Yes, definitely.
Thanks again to Evelyn for coming back today. So many wonderful thoughts about this film and about life in general, as usual. She will absolutely be back on the show before too long. Next up on the show, well, I'm not 100% sure. I'm working out the details and I don't want to promise anything just yet, but there will be an episode next week and it will be great. Until then, thank you so much for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes now, and you can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.